Welcome to the Apologia podcast, the audio-only archive of the Apologia YouTube channel. Note that some content was designed to go with visuals, but the imagination can be a powerful thing. If you enjoy the podcast, please consider giving it a 5-star rating on the podcast app you're using now to help us reach more people. Or, since this endeavor is ad-free, consider going a step further and supporting us for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/apologia. But for now, let's get to the episode. Part of the Apologetic series, posted November 29, 2023, titled Christian Detective Shoots Down My Case, J. Warner Wallace Response.
Our job isn't to be the most intellectual or powerful apologetics ministry, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so excited to have Detective Jim Wallace.
Well, that's not nice.
And we thought that every potential question you could have about life, you could probably do it with science.
Right.
And if you didn't have an answer, just wait. You'll figure it out. There's no reason to jump to God.
Well, as long as it makes me feel good, it doesn't matter if it's true.
It's all fiction, but it's useful fiction.
So yeah, that's just me having a little fun. But what Detective Wallace really says is so much worse for his case for Christianity. I thought I should lend out a hand before we point out his many flaws. Welcome to Apologia, where a former Christian takes a look at the claims of Christians. Today, we're going back to former cold case detective, now full-time apologist.
I don't make a living as an apologist.
J. Warner Wallace, talking to the Faith Beyond Belief podcast from my former town of residence.
We've had you up here in Calgary.
Yeah. Talking about his latest book.
And that's one of the things we're trying to do in Person of Interest, looking at imagining a world in which there's no New Testament and asking the question, what could you know about Jesus from just the fuse and the fallout?
And just to clarify, so there's been a popular atheist in our community.
Me. They mean me. I lived in the same literal community as the host. Now, Detective Wallace seems to have a policy of never naming his detractors, as demonstrated most recently in his exchange with Prophet of Zod.
I had somebody create a video that we're talking about. They doubted my origin story because of the way our cold case team, all this stuff on the wall back here, it started around 2006 or 7. Mm-hmm. Can't remember the exact foundation of it.
For someone who endlessly talks about his cold case history and covers his wall with trophies from his cold case history and wrote books about his cold case history and made a second career out of saying he used his cold case history to help prove Jesus, Wallace has a strangely fuzzy recollection of the specifics of his cold case history.
By the way, that's a fascinating video. Cross-checking Wallace's I Became a Christian Using Cold Case Detective Methods backstory claims.
Tried to review the book, and to be fair, he hadn't read it at the time it wasn't released.
Though it is out now, and I've read it.
But based on the interviews you've done at that until that point, he said you're basically arguing that Christianity is true because it became popular and was copied. That isn't what you're saying, though, right?
No, I mean, you get to kind of argue the same way. It matters. Jesus doesn't matter because of his impact. He had impact because he mattered.
Jesus doesn't matter because of his impact. He had impact because he mattered. That's just empty calorie rhetoric, a platitude, a slogan, sophism, a manipulation of words to create the illusion of a valid argument, used to deceive or confuse rather than to genuinely convey information or reasoned conclusions. When undefined, mattering and having an impact are just vague, feel-good phrases. Using them gives the impression of profundity without substance. If impact refers to the tangible effects and consequences of a person's actions or ideas, what does Wallace mean by matter? Some intrinsic qualities beyond effects or consequences? Does someone with unutilized ability, unexpressed characteristics, or unrealized potential matter in the sense that Wallace means? There's no evidence, analysis, or logic provided to support either direction of causality. Wallace just asserts both sides, without justification. If we now found undeniable proof that Jesus was a purely human fraud, would that change his impact as Wallace describes it? Not at all. Is everything Wallace attributes to Jesus possible in a world where his followers were merely mistaken in their strongly held beliefs? For me, the answer is obviously, of course. For Wallace and his friends, they imagine that there's some kind of line between the most influential person and the second most influential person, and they seem utterly convinced that the difference between the two has to be supernatural. Where do we find some kind of magic line to say, oh, this much popularity can be explained, but this level of Jesus popularity means divine. Like, what is in this gap that turns popularity from just being Beatles popular to...
Yeah, well, it's a good question. It's not like physics, Paul, I don't think, or mathematics. You don't say, oh, once you hit this point, you got, you know, this guy is God. No, we're not saying that. This is just one argument out of many. It's circumstantial.
Was the most influential person in history before Jesus also divine? That seems to be his argument. True stories can be influential. False stories can be influential. We could fill a day with examples. You're probably thinking of examples of influential false stories right now. You can't determine truth from influence.
It's just the opposite. And right. If you're looking for an example of why this is the case, and it's demonstrably so, then just ask yourself. I mean, first of all, you have to be aware of the kind of impact that Jesus had. And we'll talk about that a little bit. But if you think there's another fictional character in the history of fictional characters who's ever had that kind of impact, show me who it is.
Silly me. Jim's not just talking about mere popularity. He's talking about super mega popularity. Whoever is the most popular must be divine. How else could it be explained? Maybe Taylor Swift will get there one day.
Because I'm not talking about just how he's popular. Mm-hmm. I mean that he has changed history and formed the foundation of the most important aspects of human culture.
Right.
Art, music, literature, science, education, and all the other world religions all hat tip Jesus. They don't hat tip, you know, Luke Skywalker.
When Jim first started promoting the book, I spent a month recreating Star Wars A New Hope from clips exclusively outside of Lucasfilm. In my view, completely taking the wind out of the sails of his main point, that the story of Jesus can be recreated from modern sources outside the Bible. Ever since I did that, Jim's first example is always Luke Skywalker, or someone from Star Wars. I don't think this is a coincidence.
Or, you know, Peter Pan, or any fictional characters. Look, if you can't find an example of a fictional character that's had the kind of impact that Jesus has, I think it's a reasonable inference that Jesus is something more than a fictional character.
This is simply Jim inviting everyone to make a category error. The most impactful invention doesn't become something other than an invention. The most impactful music doesn't become something other than music. The most impactful war doesn't become something other than a war. The same is true of humans. Notice also that I'm not arguing that Jesus was a fictional character. I do think most of what is believed about him is a legend, so comparing restoration of Star Wars to restoration of the Gospels was apt. So here, we should compare humans to humans. The controversial 1992 book, ranking the top 100 influential people in history, has Jesus only third, behind Isaac Newton and Muhammad. So do Newton and Muhammad have more claim to be divine?
But it's worse than that, because you won't also find evidence that any other mortal human on the planet has had the kind of impact of Jesus. And that's why it's reasonable to infer that Jesus is more than another mortal.
Did Jesus change the world more than hygiene, refrigeration, motorized travel, the atomic bomb, internet, or the smartphone? I'd argue not. But Jim's book wants to argue that it was the philosophies of Jesus that predated and allowed for conditions for these inventions to exist. So Jesus gets the credit. This is simply post hoc ergo propter hoc, the logical fallacy of after this, therefore before this. It is clear to many that Jesus' message was reminiscent of existing philosophies from the Greeks, Jewish wisdom, apocalypticism, and more. Jesus' golden rule is present in all these traditions, and far back further to Confucianism, and probably for hundreds of thousands of years, as basic empathy. So by Jim's rules, I can assign any Jesus influence to his predecessors by observing that others influenced the conditions in which Jesus existed. Having done that, is it then also reasonable for me to think that any of these philosophers before Jesus were therefore immortal, since their impact is greater than Jesus? No, this is just silly.
Well, now, let me just say one last thing about it.
Sure, of course, yeah.
If you look at what popularity can bring, I have a list in the last chapter of all of the primary figures, the most important historical figures of the first century.
Right.
And all of them on my list are far by tenfold more popular than Jesus was in that first century.
Right. Yeah.
They were emperors. They were world leaders. They were poets. They
had power and influence.
That's right. And none of them changed history by Jesus.
You're just saying that Jesus wasn't that popular in his day. This is admitting that it's the stories that were told about the man after he died that had the influence, not the man himself. The stories need not have been true to be popular. Two of Christianity's great popularizers, Paul of Tarsus and Constantine, appear to have done so with virtually no knowledge of Jesus' life, but merely visions that they later interpreted. Nothing supernatural is needed to explain any of this.
Right. Well, one of the interesting points that this atheist made was, Jesus could have come during the time of the internet or during the time of VCRs or during the time of, you know, during the printing press.
Now we can be sure he's talking about me. Let's play the clip.
You will see that it's only under the Roman Empire that we have the establishment of sufficient roads. All of those roads that Paul used to communicate the truth about Jesus to the world around him were only possible after the Roman Empire.
Isn't it true of any time in history that the tools available were better than the tools prior? Why not wait until pervasive literacy so that more people could record Jesus' deeds as they happened? Or wait until the printing press? Or wait until photography? Pictures of miracles would surely be even more convincing. Or wait until the invention of movies. Why not wait until the internet? The ultimate communication tool so far. Jesus could live stream the feeding of the 5,000 to billions of people at once. Or is the argument that God wanted the earliest acceptable time so as to save more generations? If you're God, what would prevent you from using the lesser roads of 100 BC? Or why not have Jesus come just before the Tower of Babel, so that his message would have spread from there everywhere in the world? This is entirely post hoc rationalization. There's no moment in human history without communication advancements.
Isn't the point that you're making is none of those inventions could have happened
right
if Jesus created the Western culture in the first place?
That's right. So it's so funny. You're putting the cart before the horse. You're saying, well, hey, why couldn't he have come after these things that came from his influence were here?
So you're positing that there's something so special about Jesus's influence on Western culture that makes inventions possible here and impossible elsewhere, say Eastern culture? Well, let's look at the first example you gave, the VCR. If you skim the English language Wikipedia page for videotape, you'd get the impression that the developing of recording moving images on magnetic tape was entirely an American effort, highlighting various firsts in American broadcasting use throughout the 1950s. Your eyes might skip over this single line. In 1953, Norikazu Sawakazi developed a prototype helical scan videotape recorder. A deeper dive discovers that during the 50s, several Japanese companies, including Sony, Ampex Japan, later JVC, and Toshiba, were actively engaged in VTR research and development independently of American efforts. Ultimately, the industry became dominated by Sony's Betacam and JVC's VHS technologies, which emerged from the research of the Eastern culture, not the Western. While Gutenberg's printing press was a groundbreaking innovation in Europe, printing technology had existed in East Asia for centuries prior. Chinese printers had developed woodblock printing, carving entire pages onto wooden blocks as early as the 7th century Tang Dynasty. Korea's Goryeo Dynasty used a form of movable metal type that predated Gutenberg's press, as evidenced by the Buddhist text Kyiki, printed in 1377. I probably pronounced that wrong. Wallace's entire endeavor here is textbook Eurocentrism, placing a disproportionate emphasis on European and Western contributions to society, to history, culture, science, and innovation, while downplaying or overlooking the contributions of other cultures and civilizations. His thesis that humanity wouldn't have inventions if Jesus hadn't personally founded Western culture is laughable, ignorant, demonstrably false, and frankly offensive.
So the problem, of course, is that there's two things about that. Number one, well, three things. Number one, what you just said, it turns out that the progress of science and technology, even computer languages and computer search, look at all the founding fathers of those disciplines. The vast majority of the founding fathers of everything in science, including quantum mechanics, all the way to computer languages, the vast majority are Christ followers who are working under a Christian worldview.
Or even
which ignited.
Yes. Oops.
Don't point out the influence of non-Christian theists. that completely undermines Jim's point that Jesus is personally responsible for everything good in civilization. If Islam or Judaism or polytheism or paganism contributed anything at all, his case falls apart.
But yeah, ignited the sciences in Christendom in Europe, even though there were far more people outside of Christendom and outside of Europe. That's not where it began. It began in Europe under Christendom.
Claiming the vast majority of founding fathers in science and technology were Christian is an overstatement propped up by selective counting. Wallace brings up computers, for example. Ada Lovelace first proposed the mechanical general-purpose computer, the analytical engine. She was openly critical of Christianity, as was George Boole, creator of Boolean algebra, on which our computer systems rest. Conrad Zuse created the world's first programmable computer and was an open atheist. Alan Turing, the generally recognized father of computer science, had his life and scientific contribution cut tragically short by a Christian worldview that simply couldn't tolerate that he was gay. Claude Shannon, Grace Hopper, Charles Babbage, and John Backus had Protestant Christian family backgrounds, but abandoned faith as adults. Dennis Ritchie and Nicholas Wirth had little trace of religious affiliation. Besides John Van Neumann's conversion from Judaism to Lutheranism, strong, active Christian commitment appears limited amongst this influential group of founders in computing. This is a terrible example, Jim. Most scientific advancements have originated from non-Christians and non-European cultures, like mathematics and astronomy from the Islamic world, medicine and technologies like paper from China. The golden age of science in Europe occurred alongside the Enlightenment, which promoted reason and empiricism over faith. Many pioneering scientists held unorthodox religious views. Correlation does not equal causation. Science flourishing under Christendom ignores complex social and economic factors allowing its development and aspects of the Christian worldview that are anti-science and anti-progress. But again, quibbling over percentages isn't the point. For Wallace's thesis to carry, the influence of the man Jesus must be so indisputable and overwhelming that we have no choice but to appeal to the supernatural to explain it. Any portion of scientific advancement came from non-Christian inspiration, then none of it requires divine inspiration. Jim is both overly impressed with his own camp, while simultaneously diminishing their actual contributions by giving their credit to an individual who isn't even clearly responsible for the movement in his name. I don't know how the detective can say these things with a straight face.
So that's number one. Number two is that I'm not so sure that this would be a better time, just in the noisy kind of world it is, with all of the doubt and polarization we're experiencing right now. It's not that social media has brought us together to look at facts. No, it's polarized us into tribes where we doubt each other's claims. And that's not the kind of environment that I think anyone wants to try to make a breakthrough.
While the spread of misinformation and tribalism on social media would seem antithetical to scientific breakthroughs, the institution of science continues to operate on evidence-based inquiry, peer review, and incremental steps towards greater knowledge. Historically, bursts of creative problem-solving and technical innovation were catalyzed by severe social strife, and modern technologies enable more global collaboration and open access to discoveries than ever before, despite the echo chambers that may emerge online. Social media has also accelerated scientific progress in the era since its rise. It enabled rapid collaboration and information sharing for breakthroughs like the first observation of gravitational waves in 2016 and the development of CRISPR gene editing technology. Social media has facilitated unprecedented coordination among researchers worldwide in response to new discoveries and health crises, as demonstrated by the global scientific response during the pandemic. And social media has been critical for the growth of citizen science projects, harnessing the power of crowdsourced data collection and analysis. And has Jim not been seeing artificial intelligence in the news every single day this year? What a ridiculous thing for Wallace to say. The fact that portions of the public want a knuckle drag doesn't stop discoveries from happening.
But by the way, if you're thinking, well, I could just record miracles, how many things online have you seen that you doubt? Even though they seem very convincing. No, you don't trust any of it, right? Because it's all computer graphics.
I'm reminded of this internet meme, frequency of miracles charts, which humorously suggests that the occurrence of miracles decreased with the innovation of the camera and increased again with the creation of Photoshop. I don't think it's based on peer-reviewed statistics, but it seems anecdotally true. That said, if Jesus had done his miracles in that window of time, it definitely have improved reliability.
This is a third thing, and this is the thing that people underestimate. And that is that in this world we're in right now, I learned this research in the book, is that let's say you have a video, this video, we put it on YouTube and it goes viral, let's say it does. Let's say it gets 100,000 views. Mm-hmm. Well, those people are not going to download it. You're not going to get 100,000 downloads. You're going to get 100,000 views.
Right.
This technology does not take up geographic space. But the technology of the first century communicating the truth about Jesus was written and manuscript evidence. And those things took up. So, for example, if I sell 100,000 copies of Person of Interest, mm-hmm. it'll find itself in 100,000 different geographic locations around the planet. That is a much harder piece of material now to destroy. You'd have to know everywhere the book exists, not just a switch on a server. Would it eliminate the video?
It's a strange argument that a platform like YouTube that makes content ubiquitous, free, and instantaneous for everyone around the globe would be a problematic way to distribute the important free gift from God. Sure, if YouTube goes dark, that advantage ends. But there are official and unofficial, widely known ways to download YouTube content. If not, my videos wouldn't be possible. Countless data management strategies prevent single-source server shutdown threat. While digital content can be altered, YouTube as a platform famously doesn't let someone change a video once it's been uploaded. There's no such guarantee with manuscripts that can be altered with the flick of a pen. Technologies like blockchain, digital signatures, checksums, version control, and other mechanisms can make important content highly tamper evident. I'll grant that in a Book of Eli situation, where some apocalyptic event destroys all electronics, yeah, digital is going to let you down for archival purposes. But print books still exist. There's no reason for the Bible to have a short-sighted, all-eggs-in-one-basket backup plan.
And by the way, the technology is going to change. That's another thing you have to think about. Do you remember when Palm Pilots were the bomb? I used to have a Palm Pilot before I had my phone. Right.
Yeah.
Well, that data, I originally exported it.
Yeah.
But no one's reading those extensions.
Right.
That's not even recoverable anymore.
This is demonstrably false. You can go on eBay and find a long list of working Palm Pilot devices for under $50. Beyond that, there are a number of free Palm Pilot emulators out there, including one on the Internet Archive site, where you can run over 600 Palm OS applications in your browser. I hope you didn't lose any cases because you don't know how data forensics work, Jim.
Yeah.
So the same thing is true for VHS tapes.
There are still hundreds of thousands of working VHS decks. Yes. One day, the last one will stop working. But this is a strange objection to Jesus coming during a time when evidence beyond alleged testimony can be put forth.
By the way, last three laptops I purchased, do they have a DVD drive?
No.
No. They used to. So how do we even deliver these things anymore? That technology is changing so quickly.
Do you think that things once delivered on DVD are simply no longer available? No one can watch Fellowship of the Ring anymore?
But it turns out that the most reliable, trustworthy source of technology for communication still is the printed word. And it survives over the ages. It survives over the millennia. And it doesn't change significantly, so we can still recover the data.
Photographs have all the same advantages of print when it comes to longevity and don't depend on us imprecisely interpreting the meaning of dead languages. Why not wait for photographs? I'm not saying that a god couldn't or didn't pick a time and place that optimized some set of parameters beyond our comprehension. But Jim's assertion that it was perfect timing from a communication perspective, is unwarranted. There are pros and cons for any proposed time. His ability to advocate for Jesus' time says nothing about Jesus' time.
So there's the difference, I think. It's that these things don't date, right? So if you were to watch the videos of C.S. Lewis during World War II or after World War II, discussing the very material that is in Mere Christianity, because he did those as radio shows.
Yes.
If you were to watch that, you'd go, eh. That's like ancient, but if you read it, it seems very evergreen. True. It turns out that there's some advantage to the written word that actually helps to communicate an evergreen concept over the millennium.
When Jim was working as a detective, do you think that he preferred to have a live witness or watch a video recording of the statement or just read the transcript of the statement? I guarantee Jim would covet all the extra information that can and is conveyed with verbal communication. The tone, the body language, the emotion. These are all absent from written communication and cause considerable interpretive discrepancies. This doesn't sound like something a cold case detective would say. This 20-year-old witness statement sure is evergreen, and I'm glad I can't hear them.
And it's frustrating, as you probably have had conversations with kids who grew up in church who leave the faith because they watched a YouTube video.
Like one of my videos? It happens.
My son Jimmy, who's writing on our website, he's getting his master's in apologetics right now.
Right.
These were high values to us. Well, it turns out they are high values because we were raised in a world saturated by the teaching of Jesus of Nazareth. And that's why I think Jesus matters even to the secular world. It ought to matter because it turns out whatever you think is so important, it probably rests on a foundation built by Jesus and his followers.
Almost as far back as archaeology goes, we have evidence in ancient civilizations like Mesopotamia, Egypt, India, and China of schooling focused on training scribes and bureaucrats in skills like reading, writing, and math. Greece and Rome had formalized schools in grammar, logic, rhetoric, mathematics, and philosophy 6 centuries before Jesus arrived. And Romans started spreading public elementary schooling 3 centuries before Jesus arrived. The followers of Jesus didn't invent education. If Jim wants to pitch Jesus as an influencer, fine. Undoubtedly, the stories of Jesus have influenced Western culture, for better or worse. What Jim has not demonstrated is any reason to suspect that this influence is unexplainable in the same natural terms of other societal influences. Even granting some notion of quantitative difference, that doesn't infer a qualitative difference. The stories about Jesus don't have to have been true to have been inspiring. And what I care about is, are the stories true? Nothing the detective said today, or in his book, weighs in on the truth of Christianity. As the year is winding down, I want to thank all my subscribers, all my regular viewers, and especially all my members and patrons for their support in making this channel possible.
I suspect there's not a lot of money to be made on YouTube. I could be wrong. But if you think there's a lot of money to be made in this weird little niche thing we call Christian apologetics, then knock yourself out. Good luck with that.
If you're willing and able to help support the channel, please check out the link in the description. I'm very excited about the plans for 2024 and working with you to make them happen. For more looks at the claims of the former cold case detective, tap on the thumbnail on screen now, and I'll see you over there. Until next time, later.